Welcome back to Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics, and joining me today is both Patrick Karim and Chris Vermeulen. We're going to do a technical chart analysis and get two of our great technical experts. How are both you guys today? Chris, let's start with you.
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show, Tom.
Glad to have both you and Patrick. Patrick, how are you today?
I'm great, Tom. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure, as always.
Glad to have both of you join me for this interview. So Patrick was nice enough to supply us with all of these charts, and we'll go off his, and maybe next time, Chris, you can supply a couple and Patrick can give his thoughts. But we just kind of wanted to go through a couple of these and really look at this from a technical perspective and see if we can kind of contrast your guys' opinions against each other or if you both agree. So we're going to start here with gold's best friend, as you call it, Patrick, the Swiss franc. So run us through a couple of pieces of the important stuff on this chart.
Yeah. Well, that it's like the currencies, they have direct links like to gold and the correlations over, like you can see this is the USD and the Swiss franc chart. And even dating all the way back to 72, you see that they're pretty much the direction that gold takes, the Swiss francs takes. It's like I used to call the Swiss francs, if a fiat currency could be gold, then the Swiss, it's like the performance is almost the same. So you always want both of them, or you want the Swiss franc to confirm gold's move. And when I did this chart, I just wanted to see where we were in the cycle. Is the Swiss franc really starting to enter a low versus the US dollar, or it's actually like the gold, is it trying to go up? And right now, the Swiss franc is actually, this chart's maybe a couple of weeks old, but the price action is still pretty much the same. And we're actually had the low, the Swiss franc versus USD, pretty much at the same time that gold had. And it's actually also breaking out of its trend line. It's following in the footsteps of gold. And if you could see at the last right semicircle or arc, it's just starting. It's in the first quadrant of 16-year cycle. So right now it's just starting. It should line up also with the commodities bull cycle that we're entering. And it's very supportive of where the money flows are going to that currency versus the US dollar supporting gold. So that's pretty much, you want that to be aligned with gold, the Swiss franc. It's really helps when everything's aligned with it. And if you look down at the stock, the behavior was pretty much the same for every other cycle that we had. A nice bullish break into the power zone of the stock, I call. On the monthly chart, I like having the stock staying in that overbought area. And every time we had the sustained movement in there, we had prolonged outperformance of the Swiss franc versus the US dollar.
Chris, you were sharing with us before the podcast a little bit about how you really like these cycle charts, right?
Yeah, I love cycle analysis. I find it's very powerful, especially longer term views like what Patrick has here, because it really lets you kind of sit back in your seat and see the flight of what should happen going forward a long time from now. You don't have to panic about what's going to happen this week, next week, or next year. And I mean, this chart is great. It's got the nice major cycles. You look at it, the gold price. I mean, it's beautiful patterns to the upside. And how you touched on stochastics in the bottom. I love stochastics. I love RSI as well. And I think a lot of people actually trade them incorrectly in a way. And I think from the looks of it here, you and I trade them similar. When stochastics are in the upper zone, it's actually not the market being overbought. It's actually more or less the power zone. Once it's up there, it's more likely to stay up there. And that's when you get some of the biggest moves. And I think people trade RSI and stochastics very opposite. They think stochastics is overbought. I mean, it's in the top region. It should roll over. I'm like, no, you're probably going to get your head delivered on a platter because it's in a power zone. It's going the other way. It's really interesting when you mix these together. Stochastics and cycles definitely go hand in hand, I think.
Yeah, they do. And it depends like on the time frame you're at. On the monthly chart, the stochastics, like you said, it's going to stay in the power zone. Yeah, that word, that terminology overbought, even Northstar was mentioning that to me that we should get that out of our vocabulary. It's more like you said there, the power zone there. And it's clear that even there's a strong move in the price action, even when you go from the bear zone or the zone from the bottom and you transition into the power zone on top, that's the initial strong move. And then once you stay in the upper power zone, then you know that you bought right and all you have to do is sit tight.
Yeah.
So those power zone definitions, that's where the stochastic indicator on the bottom is circled by that little ellipse, right?
Exactly.
Right. So when stochastics is like above that 80 level, so the stochastics itself will be in the top of its indicator range. So when it's up above that level, a lot of people think that's a cycle topping out. They think it's overbought, and that's not the case. When it's up there, that means it's in favor. Money is going there. And just like trend analysis, a trend is more likely to continue than it is to reverse. So when it's up there in that power zone, it's more likely to continue moving higher. And if you look at the charts, generally that's the case.
So on our next chart here, we have Canadian dollar versus US dollar. And the power zone, Patrick, you marked it out on this chart.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, it's like the power zone comes back, the cycle comes back. This is like there's like three currencies that you really want to outperform the US dollar in a commodities bull market. The Swiss franc, the Canadian dollar is one of them. And after that, the dollar. And right now you see the Canadian dollar, which really got hammered versus the USD in that March Madness exhaustion downwards. And now it's actually broken out of important descending trend lines. So that's like the first wake up call. Even I drew another pivot line. So I'm always trying to identify places where my price action could start slowing down, and it's actually busting through these levels. So once you're out of those long-term, multi-year descending trend lines, then you have a chance to explode upwards. Of course, there are going to be consolidations and corrections to retest those descending trend lines, but at least you know that it's like that paradigm shift. There's something major that's changed. And when you add the weight of evidence that gold already broke out above 1350, 1400 last year, that you see the Australian dollar or the Swiss breaking out against the US dollar, you add up all that evidence. And it really helps you establish probabilities of that possible move that, yes, indeed, we are in the beginning of a commodities bull market led by gold that's starting like pretty much right now. And if you use a cycle analysis, for those cycles that I drew on the dollar US dollar chart, guys, cycle guys out there, don't shoot me. I know you're supposed to put them at the extreme low, but I decided to move them and put them where the actual monthly bar broke out above the 1 year and 3 year and the double trend line simultaneously. So I just, like, I always like experimenting a little bit, and it gave me pretty much a nice cycle that should bring us into a peak in 2029 where the Canadian dollar could start losing down versus the US dollar. And then after that, that could signify probably the end of the current commodities bull era.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways to draw cycles. I mean, everyone sees the market in a different way, and that's why we have a market. Everyone's buying when someone's selling, right? It's constant. Somebody's got the opposite thought of you at any given moment. And the cycle analysis, especially on longer term charts like this, I mean, you could put that cycle low that you've got just after 2020, you could almost put that dead between those two spikes between 2016 and 2020. I mean, there's so many ways you could skin the cat, more or less. But as you're pointing out, those trend lines are the key, because really it doesn't matter where the cycle low is. It's when price starts to break previous highs and starts to move higher, that's when money can be made. That's when a new trend is starting. And you can see how you've highlighted that in 2002. And we're on the verge of seeing that, or we are seeing that right now. It's pretty exciting how this could really move. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Canadian dollar moves with crude oil, because I know they're pretty closely related. And I don't know if crude is going to go screaming back. I kind of feel as though it's kind of had its day for a while, this big rally from the March lows. That might weigh on the Canadian dollar, but I mean, we'll have to see what goes on with the Fed and the stimulus and the amount of printing they're going to do. It could definitely deflate the US dollar enough to create this exchange here to really spike up.
So guys, when we're talking about the Swiss franc, the Canadian dollar, and the Australian dollar gaining value against the US dollar, is that possibly because of the more fundamental underlying reason of the fact that the Canadian dollar is so resource dependent?
I think so.
Yeah, I forget like the history of how they measure the currencies, but it could be like related, I think, to your exports and how much do they need your money. Like, this is really not my expertise. So sometimes I try to fit the narrative to the chart, which is kind of dangerous if I start having the narrative drive my chart analysis. But I think Tom, like Chris said, or maybe some other expert, fundamental experts there, that's probably enters into the equation there. But then the Swiss franc, why is it following gold? Maybe some of your listeners there could probably weigh in on that. I haven't quite understood the fundamental reasons why the Swiss franc has to follow that gold chart like we saw in the first chart, like almost to a T. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, it would be interesting to try and figure out what the fundamental reasons more underlying that are. So as you're speaking about the Australian dollar, that's our next chart here, Patrick. Anything else you want to highlight on there? It's basically almost the same for the Canadian dollar chart we just looked at.
Yeah, it's rinse and repeat. Breakouts are happening and signifying that we could be entering, or we are entering, a meaningful bull cycle there in commodities.
Perfect. Chris, anything to add there?
Yeah, I think the same thing for sure. Everything's kind of starting to break out. We're on that cusp of major run, I think, in metals, but it's definitely not going to be, I think, what a lot of people hope. It's not going to be metals to the moon straight up. I think we're going to run into some choppy waters, and I think we could see the markets pull back and metals pull back. That's just part of the game. These are long-term charts. So, you know, a year from now, we could still be somewhere around these levels for all we know, with a big consolidation or everything gets pulled back temporarily. But overall, there's major trend changes in these currencies in the precious metals market. And obviously, what's going on with all the fiscal stimulus globally, I mean, it just paints the perfect storm for metals.
We're not going to 50,000 gold tomorrow, Chris?
Maybe next year.
Yeah. Watch out, you might get quoted on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's never going to be in a straight line, of course. What we're looking for is meaningful trend, long-lasting trend changes, and that could save your butt. So let's say you're a trader on smaller timeframes, but if you know that you're entering a 10-year bull cycle, you know that that might save you on a bad timing. You entered a trade on a smaller timeframe. Well, you might get lucky, and you might get saved by that higher trends direction, which could actually like push the price up and save your trade from getting triggered out. So that's why you never want to fight. You want to make sure you know where you are in the cycle. And after that, go have fun on swing trading, but don't bet against that cycle. It could create a surprise to the upside there at any moment.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So one of our other pieces to the puzzle, let's say the pieces of the evidence puzzle there, Patrick, something that's very inversely correlated with gold are the real yields in treasuries.
I've been tracking real yields. Like sometimes the drivers for gold, I don't want to put like in stone, it has to follow certain drivers. But recently it's been really tracking the real yields. So I guess like the fundamental narrative is, why hold US dollars, which give you X amount of return, while you could hold gold that is giving you none, but it's not negatively yielding any returns. So this chart, really tracking it, we're pretty much still at the same area. So I'm waiting for that consolidation below that 50-day or close to that 50-day moving average to turn down. It could always spike back up. If we see that spike back up, that could actually create some headwinds for gold. And we'll see probably in the last chart there, which could probably also coincide with gold retracing more than what we expect or what we're hoping for. So this one is really one I'm tracking for. And remember, like, the yield is a combination of nominal rates. So people say, oh, the Fed's holding the rates at 1 or 2%. But it's also, you need inflation too. So it's real rates minus inflation. That's the real yields. So it could be I think in the late 70s, or the rates were starting to go up, but the inflation was that much higher, you still had negative real yields, and gold thrived in those areas. So that's, for me, the noise reduction. I try not to look at nominal rates too much. I try not to look at inflation rate too much. I just try to look at the sum of both via the real yields to see how much fuel I have to drive gold further. So this one, for me, I have targets. I have other charts there that had targets like minus 1.5 real yields on the 30-year. And I think in the 1970s, twice we got close to minus 5%, I think, on the 10-year yield. And that's when you get down to those levels, that's when you could expect maybe gold to top out. You got to be really wary when you see the real yields really spiking down. You could say, like, how much more down can we go? That's like a good contrarian place to take a snapshot of the weight of evidence to see if we're not topping out. So right now, we still got some fuel, and keeping a close eye on this one.
Yeah, I think this is a good chart. I think a lot of people don't follow this and don't realize it's, you know, with inflation and everything, you know, we're pretty much losing money every year. And you put money in the bank, you're really not making anything. I mean, it's a real rat's nest what's happened this year in the whole financial system. And I think the general masses still aren't going to catch on till probably next year of kind of how weak the economy is, kind of how bad things are really bouncing around. And you know how it is, the masses usually catch on when the move's almost over. So it's going to be interesting to see how things go. They're going to panic at the wrong time, probably. And at that time, later next year, we could see really incredible prices for metals and different asset classes. And this is a really good tool for people to have an eye opener of, you know, really, we're going backwards right now.
So guys, as we see on the upper left-hand corner here, the death cross, we see the 200-day and the 50-day cross. Is there any information we can kind of pull by seeing how far those two averages are apart from each other, or is it mainly just the intersection of those lines?
Yeah, there's a couple ways you can look at it. I mean, the death cross is followed by so many people, but I mean, they're two really slow-moving averages. Just because they cross isn't a huge game changer in my opinion, but when price is trading under both of them and both moving averages are actually trending lower, you've got a clearly defined kind of bear market or bear trend, downtrend in that asset class. And typically price will deviate from the norm, from those moving averages to a certain extent, the same distance repeatedly. And so when it does get to one of those extreme distances, you got to start to expect it's going to either pause until that moving average moves closer to it, or it's going to start to see a bounce. So it definitely does help give you an idea if you're overextended in one direction or not, if you should be putting on new trades or maybe sitting tight until there's more opportunity. Because when prices stretch really far in one direction, way beyond the moving average that it normally is kind of crisscrossing, you know, you're taking on extra risk with those type of plays.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more there. And usually emotions, greed, the further you stretch away, the more people get greedy. It's so weird that that's exactly when you should say, oh, this thing is going to revert to mean. It's like it went parabolic. It's actually when you're super close to the 50-day or the most moving averages, you're really, really close to them. That's when you should be taking a position, not when you're super stretched away.
Perfect. So as we were talking about, guys, and Chris, you were mentioning the public wakes up. That made me think about the price of silver, because when we see most people, let's say, don't have a ton of money to be able to put into the market, silver will be the poor man's gold. So we're going to see a silver chart here now priced in Australian dollars. So Patrick, tell us a bit more about what we're seeing here.
Yeah. So just like when I got on the, what really woke me to the gold precious metals, like something happening, is when I saw that gold was breaking out versus all the other fiat currencies except USD. And then I said, look at that, man, Australian dollar, it's breaking out versus gold, all-time highs, Canadian dollars. It was like, I felt almost guilty, like it was like a crystal ball, you know? And I said, something's up. And right now, if you wanted to get some vision for silver versus, is it going to reach its all-time highs in the US dollars? Then I said, let's go back to the Australian dollar. And it came really close. It had a peak above 40, 50 in Australian dollars. It's getting percentage-wise really close to that high. So right now, this chart, it could be slowing down because the Australian dollar, as we saw previously, is starting to catch up to the US dollar. So this, I'm expecting this chart to slow down, consolidate. But what it's telling me is that the US dollar should be following this same type of velocity, the same type of move upwards towards its all-time highs. So it's like another piece of evidence. If I would have seen this started crashing down, then I would have said, ugh, something's wrong with silver. It's underperforming other fiat currencies. But, and it gives like a big picture. Like there, all these fiat currencies are, when you measure them one against the other, they, oh, one's strong, one's weak. But when you measure them against silver or gold, then you see their true value and they're actually losing a lot. Like they're losing relative value there when you measure them in silver and gold. So this, for me, another weight of evidence. I added cycles on top, and we're just starting a new cycle, which should bring us on towards the end of the decade. I even put a $70 target for silver and Australian dollar, I think, for a couple of years. But sometimes targets are cool, but what's important is always, again, are you on the good side of that long-term trend? Is the cycle in your favor? And that is just one more chart there that you could put into your weight of evidence toolbox or your box. And you could sleep well at night knowing that silver is also outperforming other fiat currencies.
Yeah, I agree the same. I don't really have anything to add there. It's definitely nice to see these commodities taking off in a bunch of other currencies. And then you look back at the US dollar and it's just stubborn as can be, delayed, and it's finally kind of popped. But these ones definitely lead the way.
And of course, Patrick, we have your really awesome volume indicator on the right, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And you saw like the volume indicators, like the quantity, the volume profiling, it's the volume for that price range. And just like in this, all the other silver charts, and you see that huge base around the $20, $24, a lot of transactions, so a lot of weak hands getting rid that bought high that are selling to new hands or long hands that want to ride the trend up. And once you bust up above that, then that's what I call a volume-defined vacuum. And there's no predefined resistance to stop you. Of course, there's going to be resistance. We're going to discover it along the way as people think, okay, this is fair value. I'm going to start selling, taking profits. But there's no previous sellers or congestion of sellers just waiting to break even and try to sell. Oh, the price is back at my entry stop. I want out. So you see that pattern over and over, and you just see the vacuum. Look at the insane price move it had, like in 1 month, even 2 months. And that's because there was no, all that previous, we have that crazy volume base there that just permitted those exchange of hands from those sellers to those buyers. It's like that the bigger the base, the higher in space. Well, that's like a visual representation of that saying.
So, Patrick, we have another one of your crystal ball charts. It's actually very similar to the Australian dollar, but we're looking at silver in Canadian dollars here. And I think one of the cool things to really look at, again, with these two charts is how the cycles really do tend to line up here.
Yeah, the cycles, they fit, the explosion, everything fits pretty nicely. Like I've mentioned, like that's why people are attracted to gold and silver, the precious metals. They really respect cycles. You can't fit cycles on any type of assets. Some, they just don't fit, but some, they're cyclical type of instruments. And you see it right here. We had exhaustion lows in 2008 when the silver just crashed against the Express and Canadian dollars. Same thing in March, the March Madness. And when you measure that as a cycle, it really gives you a vision that cycles are useful. Let's say we have a correction right now. Well, if I know I'm in a cycle that I'm supposed to head towards a cycle high, and I won't, in the weight of evidence, I won't be too scared to say, okay, this is going to be a meltdown. It kind of gives you perspective where you are and how the general trend is starting to unfold. It gives you those type of clues. But let's say we'd have a correction starting and we're supposed to be heading into one of those cycle lows. Then you could say, oh boy, maybe this correction is going to be a crash and could be a bear market, you know? So it's just another tool. I try like to always add different tools to get different views and to be able to sleep well at night with a maximum of evidence there supporting our case until they don't, right? So I have to, one day these are going to start breaking down. We're going to be at the end of the cycle, and then we'll have to change our gun and start selling to this trend.
Chris, anything to add there?
No, I think he pretty much nailed it on the head.
Perfect. Let's move on to gold and gold futures monthly log chart here, Patrick. Again, we have the nice volume defined base on the right and your great target there in the top right-hand corner.
Well, it seems crazy, but like I said, I have a $9,000 target for at the end of the decade, but it's not that much, you know, like your gold's already at, let's say, close to 2,000. So 9,000 is a little bit more than four times. It's not that much. If you have a stock going from $1 to $4, nobody like blinks that much of an eye, right? And this is like a target in 9 years. So I'm not too worried about that target. What I try to identify is everybody's looking at when's the next major correction or important correction. And if we fit it with, we're supposed to hit a mid-cycle high close to 2022. That's where I have a little circle, a little bit corresponding to what we had in 2008. That's an area where gold should be around maybe 3,000 or 2,600, 3,000, like pretty much at ball range. Then we should start looking at the weight of evidence and say, oh, okay, if we ever get a signal that or signals start accumulating that gold is technically starting to have divergence, that other elements are starting to break down, and we know that we're supposed to head into a mid-cycle low, then that could be a good area to take some profits and wait for a 2008 type crash, a 30% correction or wherever it may go. And then buy when that recuperates, because you know that's just the beginning part of the bull cycle. You know that you're supposed to reach your high close towards the end of the decade. It's just, when I see this chart, it's like just mind-boggling how much time we have in this bull market. Like these important trends, they don't change overnight. Once they start going, it's like a freight train. The momentum keeps building and building. There's really strong underlying conditions that I probably can't tell you because I don't know them that are driving this. It's like, I forget who said it, but there's like this rule that by the time that you know the true narrative why price action moved, it's the move's done. So I, like at the end of the day, I try to see in the chart what's happening, but maybe one day in 5 years, we're really going to understand why, or maybe we do now know why this is going to keep going up for the next 5 to 10 years. So this is my big picture. And you know that you're buying right. Anybody that bought since those 2018 lows there when Powell did the Powell pivot, since then, it's you're in the buy right zone.
Yeah, I like the long-term chart and in the cycle analysis with gold. And if, for this particular cycle, you look back at 2000, 2001, and you look at that run from, you know, $260 or $250 all the way up to, you know, $1,900. I mean, that's a pretty big run going up. And when you look at it, you know, a $9,000 target for gold in reality really isn't all that high when you look at how big the last bull market was. And I learned a lot from Larry Williams when I was younger. I got hooked onto trading from a book from Larry Williams, and he's a commodity fanatic. And I just remember him always talking about commodities, you know, they'll go dormant. And he says sometimes they go dormant for 5, 8, 10 years, and then they come back to life when no one's really interested in them. And it'll be a whole new kind of economic world by the time it comes back to life, and then it has another big leg. And you look at this chart, and it just makes me have like a flashback of reading his book and looking at the charts and going, oh my gosh, you know, we just had a 2011 to 2020, this massive kind of bear market, or this dead time for, you look at miners and silver and gold, and they're really just starting to break out. And it's, this could be another one of those mega runs. And who knows how long these markets are going to last. You're showing that hiccup in 2008 in gold here. Well, for all we know, the stimulus is going to drive the stock market up for another year or two, a year and a half, and then it has a bear market and collapses, and that's maybe when we get that hiccup like you're showing on the chart. Gold will get sucked down. Everything will get sucked down with it. When there's fear in the market, when volatility spikes, pretty much everything gets sucked down. And you know, maybe this bull market has got more legs. It's going to be very interesting over the next 6, 12, 24 months of what happens. But everything that's happening is definitely painting a very clear picture for still higher metal prices, falling dollar. And yeah, it's definitely going to be life-changing. It already has been life-changing. COVID has changed so many lives, so many businesses in such a small period of time. The way we live and work now is dramatically different than it was in February. And I think this is just the beginning of this major change in how things are done.
I couldn't agree more, Chris. Patrick, one question I have on this chart. You're pointing to the mid-cycle low to test the three-year there. Is that something related to North Star saying that we could have a dip in the cycle in 2023?
Exactly. That's where I got the inspiration from. Here on this chart, I could have drawn two more semicircles to identify mid-cycle projections. And if I would have drawn, if you cut that 17 year and a half cycle in half, that should bring me to maybe a semicircle that has a high in 2022, 2023, and then after that, a drop into 2025. But in gold and silver, I think it's Mike Maloney that brought that to my attention. He says gold and silver have a tendency, or mostly gold has a tendency to have rounded bottoms, and or silver also, and then sharp drops. So the top is going to happen probably pretty fast in the silver or gold. So once we go in close to those 2022 highs, and then we're going to think it's to the moon, the NASDAQ, I don't know where it's going to be. And people are going to say, oh man, we're invincible. Then we're going to get that true complacency. And then that's when out of nowhere, we could have a hard sell off in the VIX spike, and everything gets sold off, gold, everything. But what's re-comforting is from my research is gold is the first one to recuperate. So as soon as gold starts diverging and starts going up, while the stock market still needs a few more months after a liquidity crunch, then you know you're on the right track, that it's going to try to continue its move upwards. So yeah, that's like an area where everybody who knows, who does cycles, is going to be wary. We're on our edge of our seats, and like, you know, and we're going to have to probably keep our greed in check and make sure that we don't keep like our blinders on there, and we try to be honest with ourselves. And when we see the technicals start breaking down, then we accept either you hold on through that crash, or you take some profits, and then you buy it on the dip.
Yeah, I think we're a long way from that big peak. I mean, you're showing it in 2022. I mean, you look at the percentage of people who own gold and hold gold as an asset. It is a tiny group of people. And you go back just a couple of years to the Bitcoin top. And I remember going on holidays. It was in December and January. And I just remember going down to the States and Bitcoin ads to buy Bitcoins with your credit card, buy it online. It was on the radio station between every song. It was on TV, on every other channel. And then it hit 20,000 that week. And that was when everyone in this resort that I was at was all talking about it, how they were buying it. They were actually buying it on their phones on New Year's Eve. They were on their phones buying it. I was beside myself going, oh my gosh, I am in the middle of like the biggest frenzy over an asset class I've ever experienced in my life. And then it put in this massive top and it just kept falling and falling. And I think we're going to get to that type of euphoric stage with metals eventually, whether it's in 2 years or a year from now, or it's 9 years away. I don't know when, but I have a feeling what's going on with the currencies, all the collapsing countries and everything going on. I have a feeling we're eventually going to hit that point where gold is going to be held by a very large group of people. It's going to be well known, and we're going to get into this massive parabolic move that could make a lot of these forecasts look like chump change, and just like Bitcoin did, like no one really expected it to go to $20,000. So we're nowhere near that. I mean, you talk to the average Joe on the street, no one owns a gold coin or a silver round or anything like that. I mean, only people in our circle, we're all talking, we're in this industry, but really if you go outside, one person outside of our trading and in precious metals bubble, people look at you funny if you say go buy physical metals. So we got a lot of, I think, potential long term for metals, and it's going to take years to mature, which is perfectly fine. The longer it takes to get up there, the more stable it will be. It won't drop straight like Bitcoin. So this is a really exciting ride. We've all started it. Gold broke out over a year ago. Silver and gold miners this year. I mean, this is the infant stage of something really good long term.
So guys, as we're talking about those very dramatic peaks, when we get to a top and the sharp fall after, is that just simply due to investor psychology just trying to capture those profits from the very top?
Yeah, generally it's just the masses. I mean, people really think and feel kind of like a school of fish or a flock of birds. When things get pushed to an extreme, they all want to be doing the same thing together. They don't want to be left behind. And usually it's just like an exhaustion move. It's really the leftover, the people who didn't want to get into it originally, they finally all pile in at the exact same time. And that's the last wave. Those are the last people to buy it. And they finally got convinced at the worst possible time. And when the last person buys it, there really isn't any more supply, any more demand for it. And so eventually it just starts to sell off and it falls. And that's when that whole market of anyone who would have bought that asset has now bought it. There is no more support because no one else wants it anymore. They all have it, right? So it's that tipping point of an asset where everyone who was going to buy it now owns it. And now it's like, who can get rid of it at the best price before it falls all the way back down?
Yeah, that's the psychology of it. And I think Chris nailed it, perfect psychology of what's going to happen. I'm just wondering, like in 2011, what were the news clippings? I remember back then there were news on TV and we were buying your gold, we're buying your gold. Like, we're not seeing that yet. My father doesn't want to buy gold. They don't want to buy silver. My father-in-law worked in the mining industry all his life. He doesn't want to buy gold. So it's like, we're not quite there yet for that there.
Yeah, I think the other angle too is equities have had such a strong run that everyone's just sitting there kind of happy with what their stock investments are doing, right? So they're not looking anywhere else yet. But when the pressure hits and they're going to start looking and diversifying, I think gold is going to stand out and silver and miners kind of as that shining. This is the next one that, you know, that could be good. And I like gold. I mean, gold has the least volatility, but as you were saying before, it holds up the best. It's the first one to kind of reverse. It's seen as the global kind of safe haven. So if you were to go ask probably 100 people that aren't investing in stuff and you ask them, what would they buy? They'd mostly say gold, or they know gold more than silver. A lot of them won't even think really of silver. So gold is the one that the mom and pops will add to their portfolios, what their advisors will tell them to buy. So I think gold has got obviously the least amount of downside. It's the most sheltered. So when fear hits, there's still going to be people buying into that move because fear is actually going to drive more money into gold. But you look at silver miners, and when the selling hits, they're going to get hit much, much harder on a percentage wise. I mean, in March, we saw GDXJ, the gold miners, fell 57% in like a month and a half. Gold fell a fraction of that, and it was in a bull market already. And that's one of the reasons why it held up so well. Gold entered a bull market like 13, 14 months ago, maybe a bit longer than that. And so when something's in a very strong uptrend, it doesn't get beat down as hard because people are looking to accumulate it on any pullbacks. Versus miners were not really in a full bull market. They were on the verge of breaking out. They were literally breaking out the day that it topped, and it ended up reversing, and then they got hit. And that's why they got hit a lot more, because they didn't have the masses behind that new bull market yet where gold did. So it's going to be interesting how this market plays out. But I like gold for kind of big long-term money. It's the safer of them all, but obviously doesn't have the same percentage returns.
So Patrick, our next chart here, gold futures daily log chart, it really kind of shows us the support level that we're talking about currently. So tell us a little bit about the target and the wall of support that we have at the 1820 price level here.
Well, you always got to look at targets where sometimes we're always looking up, but what if, you know, like where are my support levels? What would be logical like for a pullback? And when I did this chart, I was just trying to find a way to like justify or see if the numbers fit on where could a natural pullback happen, where we don't deconstruct too much of the bullish technicals, but at the same time, we'd have a healthy reset. And here comes like my distance from the bottom there, the orange histogram is my distance from the 200-day moving average. And when you stretch away, then it's like when we're talking about that real yields, when you're too stretched away, you can't stay there. And you see when you were like 26% away above the 200-day moving average, we are like it was too much, you know. So people started taking profits, and then the price action started going down. And over time, then the moving average caught up. So a combination of price correction and time made it. So now we're getting really back the moving average, the price action getting close to it. And I had it, like I just drew a trend line on the distance from the moving average catching up. And if that trend line would work out, and if we'd go back down to 7% above the 200-day moving average where we have previously known to stall, where the price action refused to go lower, then that would bring me September 17th, just for, I think that it's the FOMC meeting right on that date.
I do believe that it's around there, Patrick.
Yeah. So it happens there, would be 7% away and be a great fear entry where gold would probably sit around 1820, where there's some daily defined support. Everything would be reset. A lot of people would get scared. You'd be below the 50-day moving average. So that's a case that could still happen today. Like, and this would actually probably be a logical move to go down to 1820. And then that would probably be like the last time to back up the truck, that expression. That'd probably be a great low risk entry right here at 1820. Sure, it could spike down lower. When there's a confluence of evidence of support levels based on like previous price action that all like happen at one time, then that's when your conviction level should go up that, okay, look, this is probably a good entry there. So that's like for me, the worst case. Well, there's worse cases than that, but for me, that's a logical worst case scenario is gold going back to 1820.
And again, this is kind of something that gives us conviction when we're talking about these moves in the gold chart and the gold price over more of a long-term area, right? When we're seeing a spike, then a consolidation, then another climb higher, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you want that to consolidate. It might end up in a red candle for the month, but that's exactly what you want. And then after that, you're ready for another leg up in a healthy manner. Let the new people come in. Let the people that want to sell, sell. Let new hands come in freshly. You don't want to go parabolic right now. So if you want a 10-year bull run and you really want to reach that 9,000 target, then these are the steps that you should be saying over the next 10 years. You want to see these type of moves.
Perfect. Let's move on to our VIX daily chart. That's our last chart there. Patrick, tell us what you're highlighting here.
Okay, so that's another one. We know that, like Chris said, if there's a fear, liquidity crunch, the VIX spikes up, the US dollar spikes up, and everything gets sold, everything. So people who are long gold stocks don't wish for the stock market to crash because you're going to take a hit at the same time. And right after I did this chart, it actually spiked up, went all the way to 39, but it was contained. So now the VIX is going back down. I think it's like around 25. It deflated. So once the VIX spikes up, that's when everybody's scared, where you think the market's going to crash. That's probably a good low risk entry to add some. And as the VIX deflates, everything, the equities go up, the stocks, mining stocks go up. And I still have a target, a gap to fill. I'm not a big gap specialist, but I'm just fixated on this one. I don't think precious metals are going to, like, I have a hard time until the VIX closes that gap at 18.1. And then when it starts trending below that, then complacency might enter and people are going to start, your father-in-law might want to nibble at gold a little bit. Then that could be some clue. But for me, as long as the VIX is on a downtrend, deflating, that's very bullish for the precious metals and U.S. equities, for everything, actually.
Excellent. Anything to add there, Chris?
I think he's got pretty much nailed it there. I mean, the whole liquidity, when fear spikes and everything starts to sell off, that's one thing I think a lot of people don't fully understand, is if we do have this market crash, a lot of people want these huge market crash. They want, you know, $5,000-$10,000 gold. I mean, the real scenario is if we have a market crash. So here's the scenario. A lot of people are loading up on metals, but then they want to see a huge market crash. And unfortunately, you can't get the best of both worlds, because if the market crashes, we're probably going to see gold, silver, and miners get pulled down fairly dramatically. There's going to be major liquidity crunch, margin calls, forced liquidation. We're going to see things pull back. After that happens, though, it's actually more of the perfect storm, because the worse the economy gets, the worse the stock market is. I mean, the more stimulus is going to happen, and it's going to feed the more or less the gold machine, and we're going to start to see metals really take off. But people got to be aware of that. In my opinion, we don't really want to see, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 gold, because if you think about it, if we get to those levels, what will the world, the economy, what will our lifestyles be if we get to those pretty big extremes? I mean, it's a little scary to think what's happening right now with bankruptcies. Countries are just printing money, more or less counterfeit, making counterfeit money to pay off all kinds of bills they'll never be able to service. And it's kind of scary where things are going to be. I mean, this is the perfect scenario for technology companies, which happen to be the heaviest weighted in the stock market. So the average person thinks things are actually pretty darn good, I think. But the reality is, you know, we're in a pretty weak economy, and what's happening could get a little more ugly. And it's really frightening to think, if we do have another type of stock market crash, there's such little liquidity in the market. There aren't going to be a lot of people willing to buy when the fear sets in again. And I think it could pull metals down for a little while. But overall, I think metals long term are going to definitely be the place to be down the road long term.
And kind of as you were saying, Patrick, that's just going to be one of those situations where that's going to be maybe one of the last times that we'll be able to back up the truck on metals.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for the 1820, that's going to be a good one. And after that, the next important one is going to be after that next meltdown in the markets. That's why it's weird. Like people say, like safe haven gold. It's not really a safe haven. It's don't shoot me, guys. Let me finish. It's the response to that liquidity crunch that drives gold after. So gold, if it really be a safe haven, it wouldn't crash during a market, but it does in a bit, like in the GFC type crash, everything crashes. But it's the response that the fiscal stimulus that they do after, that's what drives gold upwards afterwards. So that's the way I see it. That's the way the charts are telling me the story. It's gold will respond very nice to a market crash, not during it, but after, because of the easing, because of whatever they're going to do to save the markets nominally there. So the numbers on the NASDAQ keep going up there. Even if measured in gold, they're actually underperforming. So that's pretty much how I see gold as going forward there. It's winning now, and it's going to win after market crash, because it's just going to be insane there, the money that they're going to print there.
Excellent. Any last thoughts there, Chris?
No, I think we kind of got it all covered pretty good there.
Perfect. Well, again, Patrick Karim is BadCharts1 on Twitter. He posts a ton of stuff. And Chris does too, at The Tech Traders. Thank you both very much for your time today. And as always, let us know what you thought of this episode, if you'd like us to do another one or if not. Thanks very much, guys.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.
think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip-your-face-off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?